Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
We were taking away the identity of the organization that they loved for many years. When you come in and make too much change too quickly and you haven't brought along all the stakeholders and the community base, then you've kind of lost the soul of the organization. And so the identity of, oh, we've changed everything, then what is the purpose of this organization now? From, you know, on paper and from a business standpoint, there were certain things that had to happen and happen pretty quickly. But from an outside viewer, customer, community member, they didn't understand why things were happening and why did they happen so quickly. So it's like we took the identity away from why the organization existed. And so it's like we gutted the soul of the organization is how they perceived it. I would say that is a real key thing for any leader that is really going to help be part of a major cultural transformation or organizational transformation, that really understanding the connection that all your stakeholders have to the purpose of why they're involved in the organization. I think that's really essential because I think that impacts how and when you make decisions.
Organizations aren't struggling today because they lack strategy. They're struggling because we keep trying to transform systems without tending to the humans inside them. What if the hardest part of business transformation isn't strategy, speed, or execution, but learning how to get results without losing your humanity along the way? That's the paradox that so many leaders are living right now. The pressure to move fast, deliver outcomes, and make the hard calls while leading human beings who are tuckered out, tired, distributed across multiple geographies, and craving meaning and community. Organizations aren't spreadsheets or P&Ls. They're made of people. And when we forget that, the very results we're chasing start to erode. In this episode, I'm joined by Elizabeth Lepkowski, a leader operating at the intersection of strategy, learning, and human impact, to explore how leaders navigate urgency and humanity, because real transformation happens in that tension. Elizabeth Lepkowski serves as Chief Learning Officer, where she provides vision and innovative leadership across multiple function areas, including education programs, products, and events for domestic and local and global communities. Her work spans accreditation standards, clinical practice guidelines, and consensus statements, publications for two medical journals, and the disease state networks that support medical advisors across specialties. Elizabeth leads initiatives aligned with organizational strategy, drives new program development to support business growth, and leverages data, business intelligence, and financial insight to achieve quality and financial goals. Elizabeth, so lovely to have you here today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're delighted to have you. We had the benefit of an earlier conversation, so I am so excited just to dive right in to some of the glimpses of your earlier career life, maybe 7 years ago, that we started to talk about. Are you ready to dive in and tell me about that time in your career that maybe was a little bit unpredictable or messy?
So 7 years ago, I was recruited to join a C-suite level team at a little bit of a smaller association. And I was so excited about it because I came from much larger organizations. This was definitely a step up for me. And I thought this was really a big opportunity to be part of really being at the table of a lot of decision-making, transformational change. It looked like there was going to be a lot of great opportunities to really put my footprint on a lot of change, make a really big impact. And when I came on board, I realized how difficult it was going to be. It was quite eye-opening. that it was going to be much messier than what I had anticipated.
I think this is really great. You've got me very on the edge of my seat, and I'm going to keep our listeners a little bit on the edge of their seat. One of the things I really appreciate about what you were doing is painting a picture of how excited you were to be able to have a voice, have a seat at the table, be involved in decisions in this new organization. Tell me a little bit about why that matters to you.
I think earlier in my career, I had some positions I was in for a long time, and I watched and observed leaders that had a large voice, had a real impact on me. I felt that they were mentors to me, and I thought, wow, someday I think I could do that. And so it was something that I really wanted to do at some point in my career. And when I stepped into this role 7 years ago, I really thought, wow, I'm ready for this. This is what I've worked so hard for the last couple of decades. I've had the right experience. I'm ready for this. And then you realize when you get there, it's not at all what you think it is many times.
So you were jazzed. You were looking at how you wanted to shape your career. You had these role models that showed you what great leadership looks like when you can have an influence, make a difference. And you're like, okay, this is my moment. I've been training for this. So tell me, you've alluded to, wait, what? This isn't what I expected. So paint a picture of that part.
I think those that really feel that they're called into leadership, I really think it's a calling. You don't just end up there accidentally. Have a visual picture for yourself of where you want to be in your future career. And felt like, maybe this is it. Maybe this is my final stop and where I'm really going to be happy and really be able to accomplish everything I really want to accomplish in my career goal. And then I found out very quickly that visual picture that I had for myself, it was going to be much harder than what I thought it was going to be.
So in a way, you were grass is greener on the other side of this fence. In the context of all you've been working for as a leader, this calling for you, as you went in, you had this idea to be able to do some things. And then you started to say, ooh, this is going to be harder. Tell me what the things were that you wanted to be able to do in that role. And then the clues that started to say, this is a big uphill climb.
One of the things that I really love to do in leadership roles is mentor staff and build relationships with people and stakeholders, whether they're my direct reports, whether it's peers across the organization. I really try to look at people as staff or stakeholders or committee members, board of directors, as people first, and then the work is second. And I found that once I really came into the role and looked at a true picture of what my goal mission were that were given to me, that a lot of that was going to have to be put by the wayside in a way in order to really drive some of the business decisions and business goals of the organization. And that was a very personal conflict that I had to have, a very internal conflict that I had with myself, and how do I balance driving business decisions and business change to meet the goals of the organizations versus having empathy for people, for staff, for committee members, and how do you hold those relationships after decisions have to be made?
It sounds to me like you highly value human beings in service of the mission, and you, in your way of working, you said people first, work second. And when you came in, you started to unpack the goals that were right there in front of you, what you were called in to do. And you're like, wow, this might fly in the face of my values. Is that right?
I would say yes. I think a lot of the organizationals, there were good reasons why some of those goals had to be made, decisions had to be made. But organizations are much more than just business decisions, spreadsheets, budgets. When you're going to be part of a major organizational transformation, you are given a very tight deadline to make some major decisions and come up with new plans and processes, you really don't have time to really understand the deep-rooted culture that exists in that particular organization.
I'm picking up that your belief is organizations are much more than just spreadsheets, P&Ls, mission statements. And you were brought in to change the culture, change the way of working, change a lot of things that maybe were bigger. And you didn't even, first of all, it was maybe against how you chose to operate because you believe that organizations are made up of human beings. And the things that you needed to work on were with tight time frames and the culture, you had no idea what it really meant there. Is that right?
That's right. The organization I'm in, it's nonprofit. It's a membership association. So you don't just have customers and investors like a corporate setting. You have members that have deep-rooted networking and emotional connections to the sense of community that associations bring. And so, and each association has its own culture. It has its own needs, even though there are some things that I think are pretty standard across different nonprofit associations, but each organization has nuances in its culture and its needs. When you're brought in to be a change agent, and you're given a very incredible deadline to make some pretty significant decisions and recommendations on what needs to be changed, what needs to happen, and when, you don't really have the time to understand the deep-rooted connections and emotions that people have to the community and what needs to be done to bring all of your stakeholders, all of your community members along and communicate why things need to change. I think that was very, very stressful and very difficult for us as a C-suite.
I bet it was. And I want to maybe slow this down just a tiny bit. You're realizing I have this giant task in front of me, a mountain to climb. What was happening inside your mind knowing that you had this Shangri-La view of this role, and then here you are facing this giant task ahead that is really fraught?
My first week of work, I flew with my CEO, my boss, to a medical institution where some of our key opinion leaders were, and it was kind of to help be part of my onboarding to really understand where some of our key opinion leaders' thoughts were and things like that. And I started to kind of understand during that trip, part of this was to help me understand them so I could rapidly help make some major decisions. And that was my first week. And then it was within the next week or so unveiled to me that I was only going to have between about 6 to 8 more weeks to make some major decisions about really transforming the table of organization from committees to staffing needs to restructuring everyone's job description to do we have the right staffing resources and competencies in-house, or does this all need to shift and change? And so that, I think, especially with, I really consider myself to be a servant leader and to really want to connect with people because I think that really helps with team building and to help with staff development and things like that. And I realized there just wasn't going to be enough time to prioritize those kinds of things in my leadership style that was really going to have to shift very, very quickly in order to help meet the organizational goals.
I can only imagine you're sitting there on this plane, you're getting to go the very first week to meet some people that are very important to your organization, key opinion leaders with the CEO, and you learn a little bit. And then the next week, they're like, hey, you have 6 to 8 weeks to really overhaul everything about the way people get work done here. And that's really personal to people. And you're highly valuing, hey, I want to have some empathy here. I want to get to know what is happening. As you were faced with this, what thoughts ran through your mind about how you would do it?
Well, the other caveat is we're a remote organization. And as a new staff leader, you can't even get in the same conference room with your department and have a team meeting in person. So you're having to assess and get to know each individual member under your purview, get to know them virtually. And Zoom did still exist in 2018. It wasn't quite as used as it is now, but we did have that available. So very difficult. I get to know everybody and ask them very specific, pointed questions to make a determination. Is this person going to be a good fit to help our team get where we are now to where we want to be? Do they have the talent? Do they have the capacity to learn new things and new processes? Are they going to be a barrier to the change? And I think what was really difficult, asking these very difficult questions, the staff were still a little bit hesitant, a little
kind
scared.
Of tipping, like, what the heck is
tiptoeing.
This person
all over? Yeah, I'm new. They're not sure they should trust me yet. They're still getting to know me. And here I'm asking all of these difficult questions, but having to be personable enough that they get comfortable with me to answer certain questions honestly. That was very difficult to do that very, very quickly, because I was going to have to make a decision about, are they going to be able to be part of the change or not?
And I almost imagine that you were carrying the knowledge that you were engaging with these people, but they didn't know that that was on the horizon. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. Yeah.
What was that like?
I didn't sleep much for 2 months. It was very difficult. You know, I knew coming in that I was being prompted during kind of the interview and recruitment process that there was a lot of major change that was going to be happening. I just didn't have any sense of how or what or timelines and exactly what my role would be. Of course, that some of that's kept confidential during that recruitment process, but it became very clear within a very short period of time.
When they opened the door, they opened it wide,
Yeah. You know, and you think about, okay, I don't have time to really understand all of the cultural nuances, and I don't even have enough time to get to know all of the staff super well in that period of time. And have to depend on what do you know? And so have to lean on your experience and your other peer colleagues at other similar associations, a similar organization, say, okay, here's what I know works. And then there are those hanging question marks on, I'm not sure this will work, but this is probably the lowest risk, so this is what we can give a try.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our Accelerated Transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or via email, and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show.
I love that. You know, now what happened? How did you make sense of all this? How did you move forward? And one of the big things, I guess, must have been you really decided not to worry so much about what you didn't know, where most of us would go to try to problem solve this. But you said, okay, what do I have? What do I know? What resources can I tap into? What allowed you to have the awareness to even go there?
I have a couple of female close friends, colleagues, that have also been in the business, the same industry for a long time, have to lean on, because you can't talk to many people internally. And so you have to lean on that couple of people that, you know, have been there through a lot of your career and they've experienced a lot of things. And being open to sharing a little bit confidentially and letting them help you problem solve when you're really stuck on something and something is tearing you up inside and you need someone to talk to. There's a couple of female friends I have in my life that I've been very fortunate to lean on them a little bit. And they, at least they don't necessarily tell me what to do, but they help me talk through the situation so I help come up with what are potential solutions.
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing for a lot of folks, and especially people that are highly successful. We really value the ability to be independent, but you are carrying a huge load of information that is heavy emotionally. And it sounds like you found support in some of your friends that could allow you. They didn't always solve the problem for you. Nobody has all the answers, but they let you process it. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a lot of it. I'm a very internal thinker anyway. And so when I finally get to a point where I have to talk about it, it's because I really have to talk about it, because I have to process a lot internally, big decisions. And when I'm really ready to share, that's when I seek out, okay, let me run this by one or two of really my really close circle of trusted colleagues and friends, get their take to make sure I'm not totally off balance or something like that.
So you got by one, focusing on what you had at your disposal, not what you didn't. And then also really tapping into your close inner circle and who you built some credibility with, because you're not just going to be like, the sky is falling. You take some time. And when you seek their input, they know that they are there to really give it.
Yeah.
I know a lot of folks that struggle to ask for help. How is it for you to ask for help of those folks?
In probably my earlier career, I thought asking for help had a very different perspective on it. I thought, you know, that means I don't know what to do. I'm somehow not adequate or something like that. And I think now raising your hand and asking for help and saying, I need to process this, I need someone to talk through this with me, is actually taking ownership of the problem. And it's actually a strength, I think, because it's you actively taking ownership of your feelings, of wanting to find a good solution, even though there isn't one solution, there isn't one right or wrong solution. But I think it's really a position of strength to realize you need help, you need to process this. I've really changed my position on things like that over the years.
I think it's really amazing, mm-hmm. because I've never heard anyone say seeking help means taking ownership of the problem, ownership of your feelings. And then you can find, if you can take ownership of those, I'm hearing that, and engage others, you can find the way. Because oftentimes we think there's a solution. And you said, no, there's many routes. That's wise. And it draws me back to the very beginning of our conversation where you were saying, I went into this wanting to get to know people. And I'm curious, if you could rewrite the script, would there be anything that you did differently if you had a longer time frame or the ability to engage people differently?
I definitely think so. A couple of major lessons learned is any change management strategy is the need to really communicate and over-communicate. Just because you do one email, one media alert, one staff meeting, doesn't mean people have really processed all the change many times. It needs to be repeated, really explaining why is this happening and saying over and over to at least try to get people from just surface kind of hearing it, understanding it, to hopefully bringing them along and them accepting the change. That is a human process that takes time. And I think with this rapid transformation from digital transformation, program and product transformation, process transformation, all happening within a very short period of time, or at least starting the change, and then having to roll out all of the change in a very short period of time. Explaining our why over and over is something that I think we should have done much more of. Looking back 7 years ago, 6 years ago, and all of the change we made in a short period of time, I think the cultural and emotional connection that our members had, our stakeholders had, our leadership had, to the way things were done for decades, basically. I think we totally underestimated the need to have many more listening sessions, have many more communications and meetings to explain what change needed to happen and when to help bring people along. I think that was definitely something we needed to do much more of. And then two, I think trying to put empathy before business decisions and budgets and spreadsheets and things like that. I think that empathy for all of our different stakeholders need to be at the forefront. Understanding the cultural networks and belonging and emotional connections that our stakeholders and community has to certain things, products, services, programs, the organization in general, understanding so much more about the deep-rooted culture, there needed to be a lot more empathy in the process of how things were done.
I love that you said this. And I also think some people may have one view of empathy. When you say, I think putting empathy in for the stakeholders, for the culture, for the community, for what was important to people, how would you describe empathy without using the word empathy?
That's a hard one, but I would say the feedback that we got from our community members that weren't necessarily close to all the decisions and why decisions were made. I think for them, we were taking away the identity of the organization that they loved for many years. When you come in and make too much change too quickly and you haven't brought along all the stakeholders and the community base, then you've kind of lost the soul of the organization. And so the identity of, oh, we've changed everything, then what is the purpose of this organization now? From, you know, on paper and from a business standpoint, there were certain things that had to happen and happen pretty quickly. But from an outside viewer, customer, community member, they didn't understand why things were happening and why did they happen so quickly. So it's like we took the identity away from why the organization existed. And so it's like we gutted the soul of the organization is how they perceived it. I would say that is a real key thing for any leader that is really going to have to help be part of a major cultural transformation or organizational transformation, that really understanding the connection that all your stakeholders have to the purpose of why they're involved in the organization. I think that's really essential because I think that impacts how and when you make decisions.
What I'm picking up is, no, that, is that empathy creates cohesion during a time of tough change. Whereas if you don't have it, things can fall apart, from the relationships within the organization to the identity and my connection with this place that I've grown and loved. And now what? I think that what I'm hearing is empathy creates cohesion and connection if you can work it into your formula there.
I would agree with that. I think it's not every leader is an expert in being a change agent and really understanding that if I could wave a magic wand and go back 7 years, we would have had some consultants that were like super experts in this area to help us. I think the couple of things that are real lessons learned for any leaders going into a similar circumstances, the culture is a huge part of why and how things are done.
I think your message touches a lot of any leader that's excited to move into a new role, try to make big change, and then you come in and you start to see more clearly because you're experiencing it. You had the added challenge of being a remote organization. That's a whole nother podcast we could do. But nonetheless, I think that what I'm picking up is there's a ton of lessons here. One, focus on what you have. Seek support from your close circle. Now you're saying, hey, maybe I would have even expanded my circle of support with some experts in culture change that could be my partners here. Really communicating in a way that isn't just an email alert, but a way that helps people to process the why, process their relationship with the change. Just an alert doesn't mean check, we're done with this communication thing. And the last thing that really stands out to me is bringing the empathy to the table, being able to build connection and change instead of letting it tear people and organizations apart.
That's a very good summary.
So let me ask you this. You said it, if I had a magic wand, I would have. Now it's 7 years later, and I'm sure you're doing things differently because of all the things you learned. How has this fast-forwarded your leadership, your career, your impact on others?
The good thing is we've come a long way with bringing all the key stakeholders along. I think there's still a couple of little areas that we are working on, but I think a lot of the initial angst has definitely subsided because we learned quickly that we needed to really start reaching out and doing a lot more communication. I think some of the communication strategies were also a little bit interrupted by COVID. So that was just sort of a whole different show. But that's a whole added layer of challenges that happened in the middle of all this. But the good thing is we have done a lot of deep work to bring former stakeholders back to the table and back into the fold, and have had to do some real recon and outreach to bring people back and really doing a better job with communicating a lot of why change occurred. And I think now a lot of our community members are much more happy with some of the changes. You know, they've had time to process and see the upgrades and the improvements we've made. And we're able financially to do a lot more for community members. So they're very happy about that, about some of the new services and things we've been able to bring in-house and be able to offer to them. So we have shown that a lot of change that occurred were good things, but it definitely took us a few years to recover from all of that.
I imagine there were a lot of moments where you had to tap into what you called deep work. And I usually only hear that in places where we're talking about looking inward at yourself, therapy, big transformational moments in careers with coaching. What does deep work mean in the context of you all as a leadership team working with this organization?
I think now when we're thinking about making major changes or thinking about improvements or enhancements to something that we're currently doing, we think about the stakeholders. So how are they going to react? Who do we need to find as our community member champions to help bring them along first? And then they also help be part of the change and they help others come along with the change. And so I think we talk a lot more about the communication strategy before we keep it very in a small circle, an internal circle. And then we think about the communication strategy, think about who are the stakeholders that are going to help us move this change along. And so I think that is a shift that we're able to do now. And that seems to be pretty effective. And we also use words, if we're thinking about trying something new, we call it a pilot. This isn't a forever new program that we're going to do. We're going to call it a pilot. So a pilot means if it doesn't go well, then we don't do it again. And so they seem to be very happy with that business approach when we present something. So we've learned to really talk about the communication strategy and what it's going to take to bring them along with us.
When I hear you describing deep work as a communication strategy, I like that you deep into that, because what you're doing is looking beyond the headlines and the task list of your change and tapping into your networks. Who are the important people that could help us here? Who are the champions that will be good listeners, that will be good reinforcers of the why, and maybe even give us some insight as to how people are feeling, because they'll engage differently than we would. And then that's a big move for deep work. But I think what I'm hearing is also deep work can be in little actions, like changing how you think about making changes by using the word pilot and really living by that. That's cool.
Yeah. And I think just lessons learned, understanding that this is a very emotional community. And I say that meaning they are deeply rooted and connected to their sense of belonging and sense of community. We have to put that first when we present something new or present that there's a shift that needs to be made. And so spending time figuring out who are going to be the champions, who are the KOLs we need to bring on board, you know, who are going to be our early adopters, and then who potentially could be our naysayers.
Yes,
because running a new idea or a change by them helps us understand how everyone else is going to react. And so being prepared for both sides, who are going to be the early adapters and are going to help us, versus also preparing for how to respond to those that we know are probably going to be a little bit harder to bring up.
Yeah, you're building a movement. And just for our audience, KOLs is?
Key opinion leaders, yes.
Awesome. Now, one of the things I always love to ask people who have been there, done that, and weathered the storm is, what advice would you give to somebody about 15 years earlier in their career that might face similar challenges?
I would definitely say, don't be afraid to have an inner circle that are a small group of individuals that you can lean on and trust, and build that early, because eventually you're going to need them. If you're going to go into any type of leadership role, you're going to find out really quickly you do not have all the answers. And so having your own outside little circle is a really good place for them, because you've built the relationship and the trust and the openness to share amongst each other. It's a really good place to go to have them give you critical feedback if you need it. Hey, Elizabeth, you're totally wrong on this. This is not okay for you to do. You know, it's okay to have people like that in your life. And I think finding who those people could be early is, I think, really essential, because those are the people that are going to help you get where you need to be later in life. And I'd also say, with no risk, there is no reward. And so this was definitely a risk for me to go from a much larger organization, didn't have a whole lot of change. I knew there was going to be some risk going into an organization that I knew was going to go through a lot of organizational change. But it's been difficult, incredibly rewarding. I think lessons learned, you really grow through the challenges. And so I really feel like I've learned a lot. And if I would have stayed in my past role, I wouldn't have grown the way I have in the last couple of years.
I love that you said, okay, don't be afraid to take the risk. And also, don't be afraid to have your network of your small circle of support and advisors, and make them before you need them. I think they go hand in hand, don't they?
Yeah.
Elizabeth, where can people find you if they want to learn more or connect with you?
I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn, Elizabeth Ball Lubkowski.
We'll put all that contact information in the show notes. Don't hesitate to connect with Elizabeth if you would love to learn more about how she works and the great work she's doing in her organization. If you liked this episode, I encourage you to subscribe or like it, and also listen to some of our other episodes that feature great leaders who are sharing a little bit what happens before everything looks so perfect and tidy. We have messy moments as humans, and I'm so grateful for you, Elizabeth, for sharing a little bit behind the curtain of how you've become a really great change leader and led with your whole human perspective. So thank you today for being with us today.
Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more change makers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you, who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.